welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a weekly show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as always, it's great having you join me for another great conversation. I love doing these shows because not only do I get to meet and have time with some amazing people, but you also get to learn so much important information that really makes a difference in your life. So thank you for joining me and continuing to listen in every week. I want to let everybody know that there is a new app that has been developed to allow you to not only listen to all the great presenters and hosts on Progressive Radio Network, but also to access the archives wherever you may be. And the app is The Progressive Radio. So if you do a search for The Progressive Radio, you can just get that free app, and then you'll be able to be good to go wherever you are in the world listening to Progressive Radio Network and all the wonderful shows that are presented throughout the week. So check it out, the Progressive Radio app. And I want to spend our time today talking about a topic that is a really important topic that most people don't know about. I've had a conversation about this in the past, but I'm bringing to you today an expert in the field and also one of my really good friends who has inspired me over the years. And she is so knowledgeable about the subject of scars and many other things that I really invited her to be on the show to help us understand what the real importance is of cutting through the skin. Whenever we have an incision of any sort, what are the consequences? So we're going to be talking about the secret world of scars. And my guest today and my good friend is Lee Ankrum. And let me just say a little bit about Lee. With over 30 years in private practice, Lee Ankrum is a nationally known body worker who focuses on assisting the body in its own natural healing mechanisms while walking with clients on their journey back to health. Lee studied at the Canadian College of Osteopathy and has deep education in cranial sacral therapy, Rolfing, lymphatic massage, neuromuscular, many other modalities. She has studied trauma and how it manifests in the body, which is so important for today. And Lee has been teaching for more than 29 years. In 2016, she founded the Ankrum Institute for Advanced Integrative Bodywork, which is a fantastic program that Lee has put together so she can pass on her skills and her wisdom to people who are wanting to receive the same level of results that Lee has been committed to for all these years. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Lee Ankrum to the show today. So hello and welcome, Lee.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's great
to be here. I think we need to let everyone know that you've been such a wonderful friend over the years. You're here with me in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I must say that people come from all over the world. And you just told me you had people fly in from Moscow to work with you because you're such a master at your craft and facilitate miracles of healing for people. So it's always wonderful to talk to you and to learn from you and to just be inspired on a regular basis with the amazing knowledge and skills that you have. So thanks for being in my life and thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you. And the feeling is definitely mutual. I learned so much from you as well, from not only you personally, but also I love listening to your radio show, this show that you have. It's amazing. It's an amazing vehicle for people to learn so much about the body and life and everything. So, yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. It's long overdue being on the show. So, okay.
Definitely.
Okay. So we have lots to talk about. There's so much we could talk about, but we're going to zoom in today on scars because this has been a topic that has really fascinated me. And as you know, Lee, because we've talked about this, it is a bigger has greater consequences to our health than most people realize. In fact, scars aren't really given much attention at all. And you have great knowledge and experience in your practice of what it's doing and your ability to just tune in. So I think before we jump into the secret world of scars, I'd like you to explain a little bit about your work and how, the unique way that you work with people and what your real goal is when you are working with a patient of yours.
Oh, that's a huge question. We could do an hour on that, but let me try to keep it sort of simple, is that my work in one way is looking for core issues, or what is the core or main issue that is creating symptoms. So when I'm working with somebody, I definitely take a really good history from them, and I listen to all of the symptoms and the things that have happened to them, and that's always circulating for me in the back of my mind. But what I'm looking for, as I also assess a person visually, so I've listened to the history, then I assess them visually, then I see their movement, and what I'm looking for is how they're, I hope you understand this, like organized around a core issue. For example, you can have somebody that has, say, a smoker, and their lungs get filled with scar tissue. Eventually, what can happen is that they don't necessarily have pain in the lungs, but it will create all of these tensional patterns, sometimes nerve patterns, going down the arms and up into the neck. So I'm interested in, if I only work on the arms and the neck where the person is having their pain, then I'm not getting to what is driving the pain or the patterns in the body. So I'm always looking for how the body has what kind of core issues and how they're organized and what else they're affecting. And the body, most often than not, for me, the symptoms are a map. They're just a map to some of the pain patterns, to some of the core issues. That's how I begin to look. When I'm doing my work, consists of doing cranial sacral therapy and a lot of visceral organ work. I do a tremendous amount of organ work. And because 60 to 80% of pain in your muscle tissue is coming from organ. And I find that in these 31 years of private practice, I find that over and over and over again, where somebody, a really common pain pattern, this is very common, is somebody has some kind of congestion or something going on in the liver, and the pain pattern will be up in the right shoulder and the right neck. So if somebody comes into me and that's part of their symptom pattern, I'm definitely going to go, it may or may not be the liver, but I'm at least going to go check there and see if the liver is creating this pattern. So that's an example of how I think and how I work. And so in my teaching in my school, I'm teaching all the structure of the body, and then we get to organs, and we do cranial sacral at the same, throughout the 2 years. We do lymphatics, so it's a very comprehensive kind of look and way to approach the body.
And what else I find really fascinating about your work, Lee, and your particular gift is you can go in and feel what's going on inside the body, and mm-hmm. So often people, whether through accidents or whether it's congenitally, mm-hmm. they're permanently, their organs are in the wrong place.
Yes, that's really true. Yeah.
Go ahead. Go.
Well, and this is one of the things I was thinking about when you asked me to talk about scar tissue, is that there is scar tissue, and that's when what you said, a cut or a break within the tissue, and then there's adhesions. So I wanted to say that scar tissue and adhesions actually create the same kind of issues in the body, and adhesions are created really often around organs. So if you have an organ in some kind of dysfunction, then what happens is that, well, let me take one step back and say, everywhere in the body there is fascia. And people might know fascia, it's that thin, filmy layer that's like in chicken. And fascia is everywhere in our body, and it's layers and layered and layered and layered, and it surrounds everything. It just has different names in different places. So when you have an organ in dysfunction, what will happen is if the dysfunction goes on long enough, the fascia that is around the organ will change its molecular structure. So fascia is semi-viscous. But when you have dysfunction around in something where fascia is, around fascia, the fascia will turn into, it will turn crystalline. And when it does that, it adheres to its neighbor. And when it starts adhering to its neighbor, it will spread. This adherence spreads from one organ to the fascia, to the next door fascia, to the muscle, to the next organ. And you have all these adherences. And those adherences actually create similar patterns that scar tissue does. So I wanted to say that and name that because it's not just when there's a break in the tissues that you begin to have these kinds of adhesions happening in tissues. So, you know, and over time what happens with scar tissue and adhesions is you get a lack of blood flow. You get less and less blood flow. You get more ischemia, which is lack of blood flow in an area, which will create more and more layers to stick together. When that happens, you end up having, slowly over time, you get restrictions in movement, in ability for a muscle to expand, in the ability for, say, the small intestine to have as, you know, for the tube to expand as much when some of the waste product is going through it. You have all these kinds of issues that are coming out of this kind of scenario.
Well, that's so fascinating. So we're talking about a similar process or a physiological response that occurs in the body through whether an incision, a scar created from that, or from a dysfunction of an organ. And
yeah.
So that dysfunction, that energetic dysfunction, I don't know, use an example, maybe the liver, there's like a... How does that work? I mean, how does the dysfunction of the organ, of the functioning of an organ, lead to the fascia creating a crystalline, you know, starts to crystallize and create that adhesion? What's the process? That's so fascinating to me.
So it definitely is a process that happens over time. So it's not anything that happens quickly. So you have to have the dysfunction, for example, in the liver, going on a long time. So the liver itself is going to get, let's just say the liver gets congested and is not actually moving the fluids. But there's so many things that the liver does, it's amazing. So you don't have the processes happening as fully in the liver. And what will happen is that because the fascia is so intimate to the organ, I mean, it is laying right around it like a second skin. It's not adhered, but it's around it like a skin. And that will change because of functional changes will create molecular changes in the fascia. And in a liver, I mean, Cheryl, I can't tell you how much I see this. This is so common, is that when the fascia changes in the liver, right, changes around the liver, the fascia is continuous in the body. So you have to understand that you just don't have fascia sitting around the liver that only sits around the liver. What the fascia around the liver does is sort of fill the entire right, where people would think the transversalis muscle is. It goes right over that and goes into the hip. So the common thing that happens when the adhesion comes from the liver and the fascia around the liver is that it creates a rotation in your hip and creates a long leg on that side. So there is what it will do is the fascia will get adhesions in it. It will pull up the back side of your hip, create an anterior rotation, an anterior rotation of the right hip. And what will happen is that will give you a long leg on that side. So then you go to a chiropractor because you've got a long leg and a short leg, and what it truly, where it's truly coming from is actually coming from the liver, because the liver often is not processing well. And so it will create this scenario, but it creates it over a period of time. I mean, I can't say what that period is. For some year, for somebody it might be 6 months, for somebody it might be 5 years. But it slowly does this, and that is the is a common pattern from the liver to lift the, to tighten up the right kidney and lift the right pelvis and create a rotation in it.
Wow.
So you've got it. Yes, exactly. You have adhesions happening all throughout the fascia going into the hip and stuff. So I'm sorry, I digressed off of scar tissue. I will.
No. I think it's really, I think that's so important. We need to understand the consequence, you know, the implications
yes.
of this, because
yes.
it's profound and how it is affecting us. I mean, if someone has one leg longer, then that means that, you know, they're uneven. It could create more inflammation because the body is out of balance. I mean, it goes on and on. Could cause pain in the hip or pain in the knee, or, you know, and people
yes.
are trying to address it either with supplementation, like you said, see a chiropractor or what, you know, whatever
yes.
modality they may get, but they're never really getting to the bottom line of what has generated that imbalance in the body.
Exactly. So, you know, the whole issue of adhesions and scar tissue, let me also say this, is that very early in my career, you know, 30, whatever it was, years ago, I took a training, one of my first trainings, because I've studied so much, one of my first trainings, and in that training, they said that scar tissue always needs to be addressed early in the treatment plan. And I was like, huh. And so here I am. I was doing body work for 15, 16 years. And then I went to osteopathic school up in Canada. And I don't remember when it was said, in the 5 years of the school, at one point they gave us a hierarchy of things that you, the order with which you work things in the body. And number one is to work scar tissue and adhesions. Number one. And so here I was, 31 years ago they taught that to me, and here it was, however many years ago it was, I don't know what it was, but 17 years ago, 15 years ago when I went to osteopathic school, they said the same thing. So that made me, that's interesting. So here is one of the things that scar tissue and adhesions do, is that, okay, I hope I'm not going way out here with this, is that everything in your body has a movement pattern. Now, I'm not talking about when a muscle contracts and lifts your leg. I'm talking that there's a deeper pattern of movement that's intrinsic at the deepest level of us. It's called primary respiration, and it is not the respiration of your breath. It is a primary one that starts as you're developing as an embryo, and you always have that operating in the body. But what happens with, and so you have this physiological movement within all the structures. When you have scar tissue or adhesions that have happened, and we all have them somewhere, is when you have those happen, they restrict this intrinsic movement and they give you these non-physiological pulling patterns throughout the body. So I have to say that the weirdest one of these that I had is, oh my gosh, this must have been 20-something years ago. I was working on somebody, and this man had these chronic headaches. And I mean, chronic headaches. And, you know, I worked on his neck, I worked on his head, I did all this stuff. And then one day I noticed he had a scar on his hand. So I said, I don't know, I'm just going to work on this scar. I worked on the scar, and he never had to see me again, because it was actually pulling through his arm, into his shoulder, into his head, and creating his headaches. I'm like, whoa,
wow.
That was amazing.
That was such a valuable lesson to understand that principle of addressing
yes.
the scars first. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about fascia, because that's a pretty fascinating topic right there. And what the fascia really is and why it's so important to keep it healthy, and the role it
yes.
plays in our whole you know, our, every aspect of our functioning. I think that's a really interesting topic that people aren't aware of.
Well, like I said, fascia is everywhere, and it's actually in what they call trains or chains, meaning that they're in continuous, it's in continuous sheets through the body, okay? And it does it isn't just that it's, as I said earlier, it's not just over there or over there. It's continuous, and it often has different names in different places. For example, the pleura around your lungs, that's fascia. And by the way, there's actually four layers of fascia around your lungs. And then you have the pericardium around the heart. And then you have long sheets of fascia that go from the neck into the thorax, into the pelvis, and then even continues down the legs. So that's one aspect of fascia. Another is that we said it was semi-viscous, meaning it has a fluid quality. And the big thing about them is that it has this fluid quality because one of the things it's helping to do is to allow structures to slide next to each other. So you want one muscle that's next to another and each doing a different job to be able to slide because they're going to contract at different times. If there's some kind of adhesion between them, then each of those two muscles will be contracted for each of the jobs of those muscles as opposed to its own job. But the other thing about fascia that's so amazing is this, is that it helps you in structure. I mean, it helps structurally. You could not see some of these people who are bent over, stay bent over, if the fascia didn't lock itself down in order to hold them. So that's another one. But even more amazing than that is that the fascia is a communication system through the body. It's a hormonal communication. It is an electrical communication. It is communicating to the whole body through the fascia. So fascia is quite an amazing substance, and there are bodies of work that are based on working your fascia, you know, and there's three layers of fascia. There's superficial, middle, and deep. And you have the deepest layer is the fascias that are around your brain and spinal cord, part of the cranial sacral system. You have this middle layer that's around everything, muscles and organs and bones, and it's just filling and filling and filling the space. And then the superficial fascia, if we were able to actually peel the skin off the body and not take that fascia with, you would still have every imprint of your whole body in that superficial layer. So fascia is quite amazing. And one of the things with, say, fascia, I'll give you this example, is say a woman has like a hysterectomy and they cut this, you know, she has scar tissue in the lower pelvis. So you have fascia that is in what we call, in the pelvis, and it's called the pelvic bowl. And you have layers and layers and layers of fascia in the pelvic bowl. Well, now it's been cut through in order to give this woman a hysterectomy. They sew her back up, and she gets scar tissue in the front, and all the layers of fascia will adhere together. But what also happens in that, when you have that cut and the sewing back and the scar and all this adhesioning happening where the scar tissue is, you also lose lymphatic flow. Because there's that lymphatic flow is going through your superficial tissues there. So, I mean, it's so complex when you start looking. And eventually what a woman is going to probably end up with, not always, but very often, is back pain. Because those layers of fascia and the scar tissue will adhese together and eventually lock up the normal and natural movement of not only the back, but the legs coming out of the pelvis, if that makes sense to you. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you have this combination of, you know, these kinds of, you get an incision in there, you get sewn, and the layers begin to adhere together. So commonly what a woman finds when she's had a hysterectomy, for a couple of reasons, but oftentimes there becomes issues with her bladder because the scar tissue adheres to the bladder. And in the example of adhering to the urinary bladder, to the bladder, what happens is that your bladder is like a super ball, and the bladder will expand as it's filling with fluid. And in the walls of the bladder are proprioceptors. There's receptors that tell you when it's gotten so big, it's like, oh, now I have to use the restroom. But if you have scar tissue from, say, a hysterectomy or something there where you have adhesions around your bladder, what will happen is your bladder cannot expand, and these women experience having to pee incredibly frequently. So it's, and what also happens is that there are adhesions that come from this original scar, for example, that will also start putting make the fascia that goes from the pelvis into the legs restricted. The woman does not know, or the person does not know, that you have restriction going down your leg, but what does happen is each step you take tugs on the fascia, makes you have to use the restroom that even more often, even that much more often.
Wow.
So,
and we call that incontinence.
And we call some of that incontinence. I know. I see it all the time. I mean, once you have a hysterectomy, the bladder and the uterus, as all these women who've had children know, are quite intimate. And you take out, and they share, the bladder and the uterus share a fascial, I'll say it this way, a fascial bag. They share that. So when they cut into that, of course, they've cut away the fascia that's around them, holding them a little bit together, and they take the uterus out, and therefore the bladder becomes more unstable. There is that. But there is also all the adhesions coming from that surgery is going to create all this fascial adherence on the bladder and begin to create some of these problems. It's very common.
So that leads me to think, Lee, that anytime anyone has any kind of surgery, whether it's a gallbladder surgery or heart surgery or exploratory surgery or whatever the surgery may be, you know, hip replacement, knee, ankle, it's impairing that fascia, which will then, as you were describing, can crystallize and become more rigid and lead to a whole host of other ongoing complications.
Mm-hmm. When I have a client that's actually going to have a surgery, what I like to do is I like to free the fascia in the area prior to whatever they're having surgery on. And then it is a rule of thumb that after someone has a surgery that you don't work on them for 6 weeks because it takes the body 6 weeks to really repair it deeply. So there's that rule of thumb, don't work on or near a scar for 6 weeks. But after that, you definitely want to work on it or in some way help it. Because here's the deal, is that when you have scar tissue happening, it will keep adhering to its neighbor, and that neighbor will adhere to its neighbor. It will keep insidiously growing. I don't want you to get the image that it grows bigger. What it does is it solidifies things together. And it does that, and it keeps doing that until there's intervention to start to break that up. Once you start to break up scar tissues, and we'll talk about ways to help yourself with that, once the scar tissue starts to get broken up, then you don't have all of these, whatever structure it is, because it'll stick to whatever. And so you may have bone, muscle, nerve, blood vessel, other organs, any of the soft tissues, any of these tissues will stick together. So what you end up getting is these ischemic deep layers of scar tissue that have adhered to a lot of things, and you'll have layers and layers and layers of that. So it's never too late to work on a scar, even if it's 40 years old, because you will make a difference in it, but you have more scars. You'll have more scar tissue rise up to the surface to be broken apart. But a person will begin to feel fairly quickly how much freer they get in the legs, in the pelvis, in the back, when you start to break this up.
And like you were saying with that gentleman who had the headaches and you worked on the scar tissue in, on the hand, that a scar tissue can cause this interference pattern of the flow of energies that can affect other organs that you wouldn't have thought were being compromised from a scar that could be somewhere else in the body, not directly near that organ.
Exactly. Exactly. That's very, I mean, it's much more common than people think, especially if the scar hasn't been worked and it's older. If it's older, the reach of the adhesions are going to work up through the body, and they kind of, you know, that's one of the things about scar tissue. It doesn't have any rhyme or reason the way it moves. That's why I said much earlier it's non-physiological. So it doesn't have a physiological way that it's laying down. All the original structures have your fibers are all going in one direction. And when you get an interference like that, and then the scar tissue comes, the body's been signaled to send connective tissue to stabilize an unstable area. But it doesn't say, let me lay this down in those lovely little ways it started. What it does is it just sends a glom, and it's, you know, glomming it together in order to stabilize it. But it keeps doing that. And so then you get it where then you start to get all the adhesions together of layers and layers of things, you know. So it's pretty insidious, I have to say. And it, you know, it never hurts to work a scar, no matter how old it is. Really.
So before we go in and talk about solutions, because there are solutions, fortunately.
Yes.
But I want to share a little bit about, from your experience, some of the effects of surgery and the scar tissue that's produced from surgeries. Let's start with cesareans, because cesarean births are so common, and most people don't really give much thought about the consequences of cesarean to the baby or to themselves. But let's start with the consequence of cesarean to a woman and her body.
Okay. Well, one of the things, as I, you know, briefly said earlier, is that the cesarean is now going to inhibit some of the flow of your lymphatic fluid. Now, lymphatics are part of the immune system, and there are very, very thin, very thin. They're like silk thread lymphatic veins. That's what how thin and light they are, delicate they are. And these lymphatic veins is more of your lymphatics are running in the superficial tissues of your body. So when you have a surgery or you have a cesarean, what you end up getting is so let me also say this, is that like 60 to 80% of your lymph nodes as part of this, a part of your lymphatic system, are in your abdomen. So when you have a cesarean section, you are now interfering with this lymphatic flow that is happening. And so you have a reduction of your immune system right there, or a bit of a suppression, because it's not going to function as fully as it would have if this did not happen, okay? And it's especially from the legs that you're going to find that the lymphatics are not going to move as well out of the legs and through the pelvis when there's a cesarean. So that's one thing. So that's one thing that happens. A cesarean section, as I said, as well, also, what it does is when it cuts through this fascia, our pelvis has so many layers of fascia in it in a bowl shape. And your organs are kind of tucked into different layers of this fascia. And so think about this, is that also in a woman, the way the anatomy goes, the architecture of the anatomy from front to back. So you have a woman's pubic bones, and behind that is her bladder, and behind that is her uterus, behind that is her bowel, and behind that is her sacrum. And so what happens is that you get adhesions not only around the bladder from a cesarean, but it will begin to reach in around the uterus and then around the bowel and then it will adhere to your sacrum. It will most likely end up in pain at the sacrum. So your sacrum could ache. They could have SI joint pain, sacroiliac joint pain. They could have a hip that becomes misaligned because there's more fascia on one side, more scar tissue on one side than the other. So these are the kinds of things that happen. And they happen a lot. And the scar tissue that happens all around the pubic bone and down into the legs is huge at the lower pelvis. You know, the people don't tend to think that the membranes from that lower pelvis go into the legs, but they're continuous into it. So it really affects them as well. So that kind of surgery will definitely. Gallbladder surgery, up your gallbladder is hanging off underneath your liver in the right side of the rib cage. So on the very base of your rib cage on the right side, kind of in the middle, in the front, is your gallbladder. And they definitely treat the gallbladder like it's an organ that it's okay to go. And I'm a big one for, unless it's necrotic, you don't have your gallbladder taken out, unless it's gangrenous or something. But what happens when you have your gallbladder out, the area where your gallbladder was and the solar plexus area has so many structures. I can't even tell you how many structures are in there. Well, I can. But there, you know, the beginning part of your small intestine is in there, the head of your pancreas is in there, your adrenals are in there, your kidneys are in the solar plexus area. You have your hepatic artery and vein going from the small intestine to the liver is in there. And what happens when they take, even when it's done arthroscopically, the you know, where the arms go in is left tracts of scar tissue. And when they do, when that happens, is that a lot of people get all this scar tissue all over those ports and blood vessels and organs, as well as you have neurological centers there. The celiac ganglion is there. You have a lot of stuff in there, and it becomes adhered together. And so oftentimes what people will feel is they can feel a few things. One is they can feel like they get too full too fast when they eat. They can feel like food won't go through and like they can't actually put their rib cage down, you know, like they have to hold it up leaning back because they can't put it down and just rest on this area. You can have reflux from this because it is very common because you have all these adhesions here and it creates, holds the bottom of the esophagus open. I mean, it's countless over here for all the different symptoms that people can have when a gallbladder goes. It's actually a big thing. They treat it like it's nothing, but it's a big thing. And you usually get an adhesion because the gallbladder and the pancreas share the same valve into the small intestine. And when the gallbladder is taken out, then you get adhesion at that valve and your pancreas backs up. And your kidney and adrenal, your left kidney and adrenal lives underneath that pancreas. So you can get adrenal issues from this.
You can get pancreatitis from it if that valve is
you
closed?
You could. You can get pancreatitis from that when the valve is closed. And one of the other things, I mean, some people feel it is nausea because that's common to get nausea when there's something going with the valve from the gallbladder or where the gallbladder was. And interestingly enough, if they take the gallbladder out and they take the pipe that went from the liver to the gallbladder and put it directly to this sphincter so that you don't have the pouch, the gallbladder is the pouch, but you have bile going from the liver to the small intestine, but it's actually not being regulated well. But if you have an adhesion at that sphincter, which is called ODI, ODDI, the sphincter of ODI, if you have an adhesion there and it's not working well, not letting things flow through and backing up the pancreas, what sometimes happens is the tube that goes from the liver to the sphincter will blow up with bile. And people will have problems because you have this adhesion over here and it's not creating flow. See, that's one of the things that I feel about the body on a body level, you know, not on an energetic level or not on the energies and that kind of level, but on a structural, physical level. My belief is the biggest thing that we as as therapists are doing is to try to get flow of all the different fluids, because that's where the health is residing on a body level, is in the fluids. So I need my blood flowing, I need my lymph flowing, I need my digestive flowing, I need my cranial sacral fluid flowing, and that is what our job is as body workers on one level, in the beginning level, is to get all that stuff moving, to get nutrition to and waste away, you know. So I'm sorry, I digressed.
No, it's great. We need to really understand how everything is connected to everything, and when we interfere...
Yes.
Sometimes it's life-threatening, absolutely necessary, but there are going to be consequences, and we need to be aware of how to compensate for what's just been interfered with. And before we go for solutions, I want you to talk about the consequences from breast surgery, whether it's from breast implants,
okay,
or from mastectomies, or from any other surgeries that may occur for one reason or another in the breast.
Okay. So we have different kinds. So, I mean, the least, I shouldn't say it this way. I was going to say the least implication is an implant, but it will create an issue as well. But any kind of breast surgery around the breast, whether it's reduction or an implant or a mastectomy, the scar tissue that's created there, what happens is that it will go on to the fascia and tighten the fascia that's on your rib cage in general, the outside. But it will also, in between each rib, there are three layers of muscles. They're called intercostals, and it will put scar tissue into the intercostals. And because it keeps going, as I've described, what it does is, and I said there's four layers of fascia around your lungs, is that what it does is, I always see the scar tissue as like roots, keeping going, you know, like keeping going. And so it will keep going and adhere itself to those layers around the lungs. And so it will slowly but surely lock down the lungs. Now, you won't notice in the beginning that you are restricted in your breathing until it goes far down the line. It takes things a while, if they're developing slowly, for you to actually feel the restriction or realize, wow, I don't breathe as deeply. But the other thing it can do is this, is that as it tightens the superficial fascia, you know, I had a client not too long ago who came because she has this right hip issue, and she had had a lot of reconstructive surgery on the right breast, and it went down the fascia, and then it went into the fascia that I described around the liver, and then it went down the liver and into the hip and rotated her hip anteriorly and created a long leg on that side. And that all came from a number of reconstructive surgeries on that breast. And so you have to go up, and that's working the core issue, is that breast, you know, is working the scar tissue all around as much as possible, then opening the ribs, and then releasing the fascias around the lungs so that you get the complete, that's how come I see people get well more a lot, is because I do all the parts. So not only am I going to work the scar tissue, I'm going to let the lung fascia go, then I'm going to let the liver go, then I'm going to work the fascia that went into the hip, and then I'm going to help the hip to release itself and go back into its normal place. So I'm going to get all the parts. But it is super common to have breast surgeries and breast reductions where they take the nipple off and they give you a T underneath the breast. And then, you know, what happens hugely with that is there is a real interruption of the lymphatic fluids again, as the lymphatic fluids moving out of the breast tissue and stuff, and moving into and going up to return to the blood. So you get a real restriction in that. So working the scar tissue on these breasts that have had all these different interventions, for whatever the reason, you know, sometimes there's necessary reasons, is really big. It creates a lot of issues. And some people will feel the pain in their back, in their back, when they're having stuff going on in the breast tissue. So, you know, it doesn't always mean that the symptom, like a gallbladder symptom for a gallbladder that's too congested, is pain in the middle of your back. So you don't always, you know, you have to understand symptom, you know, like pain patterns and how they work through the body. But that'll happen with breast tissue as well, as you'll begin to get pain in your back.
I mean, it's so fascinating. Who would have thought that the scar tissue from a breast surgery could be responsible for the rotation that's happening in the hip? And, you know, I mean, unless you have the big picture, unless you understand it, it just seems like it's so disconnected. You wouldn't even think there's a relationship.
You wouldn't even think. Let me give you one more example, and then ask me whatever you want. Is I had a woman come in, and she had had an appendix at 5 years old. So she had her appendix out at 5 years old. And so, you know, the appendix is inside the right hip. So this woman came to me, and when I took the history, her history was, you know, she had the appendix at five. She had had kidney stones many times. She had a knee replacement on the right knee. She had, she also had a hysterectomy. She had to have her children cesarean, and then she had a hysterectomy. And I have to tell you that all of that was produced by the scar tissue that happened from that appendix scar. Because the scar tissue from her appendix squeezed the ureter down from the kidney going to the bladder. It adhesed the side of her bladder and her uterus and pulled it over to the right-hand side, which is very common to get those things moved, you know. And then it pulled it over, so there was no way that baby was going to find the right way out, right? So then what happened is that the fascia that's around the side of the uterus and where the appendix was goes down the inside of the leg to the knee. So she ended up walking for many years, wearing out the inside of her knee, and got a knee replacement. So every single thing that this woman had was a result of scar tissue from having an appendix out when she was 5 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a good example. Like when I figured all that out, I was like, oh my goodness, you know? So anyway, there you go.
Yeah, what a revelation for people who you worked on, a revelation for people listening, because I'm sure everyone is thinking now, oh my God, I had that surgery and nothing happened, and you know, now what? So that leads us to now what? are the solutions?
Well, you know what? I can just name three off the top of my head. One is that if you have a therapist that, you know, knows how to work scar tissue, because there's someone manually breaking apart the scar tissue, breaking apart the structures that are stuck together. And I want to say it's not pleasant, but once they're done, it is amazing how light and easy things feel as they're after they've broken apart the scar tissue. So you want a therapist who really knows how to do that and knows their anatomy. That's one.
Okay, wait. Before we go on further, are there specific therapies that have been developed? Who do people look for? Isn't there a therapy called myofascial therapy? Does that relate?
Yes. Well, there is myofascial work, and you'll have to ask your myofascial therapist if they know how to break scar tissue up, because it doesn't always go hand in hand. On the deeper part, you know, the scar tissues that are around the organs, as we're describing. So somebody has to really know where the organs are and know the anatomy to do that. So I'm telling you, the graduates of the Ingram Institute are going to know how to do that, because I teach them scar tissue and they get how to work organs and break up adhesions between organs. But I'm trying to think, there is no specific anybody. Some massage therapists know how to do it. Some of them don't. But it'd be a good inquiry if you have scar tissue to try to find someone who can work it. So there's that. And then there's, I recommend to my people, especially with abdominal scar tissue, to do castor oil packs. And you can look up online, and there's definitely instructions on how to do castor oil packs, because as the castor oil is heated and sinks into the tissues, it helps loosen up adhesions. And then there is, as you know, there is the you had interviewed somebody on the Avazia machine, little machine. And the Avazia machine has a setting on it that will break up scar tissue. So any way that you can get that you get your scar tissue broken up, it will help so much structures in other parts of the body that you don't even realize are being affected.
So let me just say the Avazia, which Dr. John Hsieh was my guest recently, and he is an expert on microcurrent technology. And microcurrent technology has a lot of applications. And one of the applications is that it has a setting as a frequency that can actually break up, as you were saying, scar tissue, which is what I have been using in my practice with people with scar tissue quite successfully. People who've had a lot of pain because of incisions, you know, in their abdominal surgery, it disappeared. They found that it had amazing relief for them, and other consequences from surgeries have been cleared up. So Avazia technology is one of those technologies that is very effective, very profound in being able to repair the damage from scar tissues. And I work on people with all sorts of scars. What's your thought about serrapeptase, a proteolytic enzyme?
Yes, for some of the deeper the adhesions and scar tissues that are deeper around the organs, I'm in agreement with that. I am in agreement with that. You know, it works really well for some people, and it works medium well for others. So, you know, it's not as tried and true as somebody going physically into your scars and stuff like that. But I have had some success with some of my clients with that.
So and just. You know. To let people know, if they haven't heard of serrapeptase, that's S-E-R-R-A-P-E-P-T-A-S-E, serrapeptase. It's a pretty fascinating enzyme because it's an enzyme that is harvested, I don't know how they do it, from the inside of the intestines of a silkworm. And it's an enzyme that a silkworm uses to dissolve the cocoon that it has, you know, created around itself. So it dissolves dead fibrotic material, which is why it also can be useful for things like fibroids. Pretty fascinating stuff. You know.
Yes, very fascinating. I have had clients use it for fibroids. Very fascinating. Yeah.
Okay. So. What about Chinese medicine, acupuncture? When I studied acupuncture, they had a technique where they would use these small little short needles, and they put the needle on either side of the scarring, and that was a technique to help restore the flow and the fascia of the energy.
Yes, right, because the fascia is conducting electricity. So when you're going from side to side, you know, that will try to get the current to go through the scar tissue. You know, there's also dry needling by some of the acupuncturists for scar tissue. So, you know, and people find varying degrees of success with all the different kinds of therapy. You know, it just depends on your body and your responses to things. And so that's what I have found, is that, you know, people are all different. And so some things work for some and other things work for others.
Right. So, the take-home message, number one, is after 6 weeks of having surgery, people should be working with someone or some modality to help resolve that scar tissue formation that occurred from the surgery in the fascia, and to be working with something either like castor oil packs or serrapeptase, usually all the above, I would recommend.
Yes, me too.
So the most important message is that any sort of surgery is going to create a scar tissue, is going to create adhesions, and you need to be aware of it and pay attention and do something to dissolve those adhesions and scar tissue. That's a really important message. It's hugely important.
It's
for all the reasons you talked about. So Lee, we're just about at the end of our conversation, but I wanted you to just say something very briefly about your institute, the Ankrum Institute. anchorminstitute.com is the website, anchorminstitute.com. And by the way, I'll put information in the archive show about microcurrent technology and some of the other things
talked about.
Okay. But yes, say just, you know, in about a minute or so that we have left, why don't you just talk a little bit about your institute?
Well, my institute is a 2.25-year program. People meet for 4 days every other month, and we meet 14 times, so it takes about 2.25 years. So you're meeting on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every other month. And what I do is we begin to work through the body. The first thing I do is that I teach the principles of how the body works, because that is a huge missing piece. And if I teach you the principles or help you to understand the principles of how the body works, then you can go anywhere and do anything. So my school, I teach you techniques for the 2.25 years, but it's not a technique-driven school. It's a whole paradigm shift on how to come and work with the health that's existing in the person and how to get that health to rise. You know, just like I'm saying, how to get the fluids to begin to circulate. That's rising the health that's there. So, yes, I'm teaching all sorts of techniques for all different parts of the body, and then we teach techniques for the organs. And through the 2.25 years, I'm teaching cranial sacral therapy as part of the whole therapy. So it's a real paradigm shift on not, here's this symptom, this is how you treat it. It's like, oh, here's this symptom. What could be creating this, and how is the body telling me how to work it? So my first class is about 1.5 years into the training, and they are doing phenomenal. So many of them, I have different chiropractors and physical therapists, massage therapists. I've got a plumber and a person who does lawn care, who are they're changing their careers. So it's not just about people who are in the field. It's people who are interested, you know, in the body and in health and how to help other people to it. So, it, you know, all this philosophy is definitely on my website, on the anchorminstitute.com, and it's just a very different way of thinking and coming to the body and, you know, letting the body tell you its story and how it wants its story to be helped. And that's a real different way to do that. So, and I love it. I just love it. I love the body. I love all this stuff. So we have a lot of fun when I'm teaching, and it's kind of great. It is here in Oklahoma, in Tulsa area. And so I appreciate you so much, Cheryl. Thank you for letting me be on your show.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I also want to mention that people come from all over the country to do this program,
yes.
Soon probably from all
yes.
over the world. So anyone who's interested in learning more about your work, which I have to say is really unique in the world, and so effective, so powerful in its ability to understand the body and create results. So people should check out the Ankrum Institute, A-N-K-R-U-M, institute.com, and learn more about Lee's work. And Lee, thank you so much for your time today and for your
thank
wisdom.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Giving
thank
us
you.
So much more profound understanding about the healing that we need for our body. So, so thanks again, Lee. It's been great. So appreciate
thank you.
Too. And I so appreciate all of you listening in. Thank you for joining me for another wonderful conversation on What Women Must Know. And until next time, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self.